And welcome back to another edition of the On The Board Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Thomas, a.k.a. Shawnee on the mic. Happy Wine Now Wednesday to all. As always, joined by my main man, my co-host, William Cerucci, a.k.a. We'll See Who Was East of Me. Will, happy Wine Now Wednesday. How are you?
Sean, you did it again. You did it again. What? Who's better than a camel on hump day? Nobody.
Nobody. How can I? Oh, my God, Will. Anyway, Will. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing good, Sean. Can't complain. You know, I'm here. It's Wednesday. I know you're here. We're about to do another fine episode of the On The Board Sports Podcast, found everywhere. Ask Siri, ask Alexa, ask anybody about the On The Board Sports Podcast. Well, robots anyway, ask them, and they will guide you to us. So if you build it, they will come. And we built it, and we're here. We're making the best out of the situation right now, Sean. But the main thing, Sean, you asked me how I'm doing. Sean, how are you, bud? How's everything going with you, sir?
I am tired. My girlfriend's birthday was this past weekend, and just dealing with her and the moving, the running around, the carrying stuff, it was just crazy. I am sleepy. I'm tired, but I am okay. And we will get into this. My Titans are 5-0.
That's right.
The football gods are raining.
Let's lead off with them. Let's not talk about the sorry excuses that are.
We'll get to the Titans, Will.
No, let's talk about them right now. Let's talk about them right now because the Jets are a disaster. We'll get to them in a second. The Giants, they beat the Redskins on Sunday. And, you know, the Titans right now, they're 5-0. They're going out there and they're killing it right now. Sean, talk to us about your team. They were one game away, one half away for making it to the AFC Championship game. Ryan Tannehill escapes the clutches of Adam Gase and transforms his career from a guy that's basically on the fringe of becoming a backup at this point in time to now being a multimillionaire quarterback. And with everything going on, you know, Derrick Henry is the offense. We get that. Mike Vrabel is doing a great job down in Tennessee with this team and, you know, putting them in that situation saying, hey, guys, listen, last year is not a fluke. We're not here to be that fluke, a la like Jacksonville was when they made it to the AFC Championship game and also drew in the same division. But these guys have went out there and they played well. Close game against Houston, for sure, against the Texans. Should they have lost that game? You know, going for the two-point conversion, it is what it is there. But they won in the shootout. They were up big at one point in time, and Houston wound up coming back. Sean, I'm gonna let you take this one away here as the Titans escape in overtime on a Derrick Henry touchdown to win the game to keep them 5-0. The floor is all yours, sir, on this one.
Well, I look at the Titans, and they're finding ways to win. The Broncos win. There was a defensive game. They had to kick the field goal to win the game. The Vikings game, it was a back-and-forth game. They found a way to win. Houston, they were up big, and then they trailed big, and then they were down 10. They came back. They tied the game. Then they come back. They score 10 points to tie the game. In overtime, they win the game. And against the Buffalo Bills, we blew them out. And against Jacksonville, we had to win that game as the clock expired. Well, good teams find a way to win. And I tell my flag football team this all the time. Well, we are 2-3. We've lost our games by 4 points, by 8 points, and by 6 points. And I tell them it's a one-possession game that we've lost our three games by. But good teams find a way to win those games. We're not a good team yet. We're on the way, but we're not there. Well, the Titans are a good team. They are, like you said, they are showing everyone that the AFC Championship game last year that they deserve to play in. It's not a fluke. Vrabel's doing his thing. And Ryan Tannehill will forget escaping Adam Gase. Ryan Tannehill is a MVP candidate. I never thought I would say
Nobody did.
Especially when you're on a team with Mr. Derrick Henry, who's also an MVP candidate. A candidate will in his own right. So, well, we're playing well. The defense leaves a lot to be desired at times. But listen, you got to find ways to win. When the defense plays well, you got to score points. When the defense doesn't play well, you have to score points. So, we see what happens there. But a very difficult game, probably the best team in the NFL coming in, and Pittsburgh, game of the week. We'll pick that game later, but I am excited for 5-0 Bell.
On a scale of 1 to 10 right now, with everything going on, I think the last time the Titans started off this hot was back in 2008 with Kerry Collins. On a scale of 1 to 10, you know, do you see this team going far in the playoffs? I know it's 5 weeks in, and I've seen plenty of Jet teams that started off 6-0 and 8-3 respectively, and they didn't make it to the playoffs. I know it's early. I don't want to jinx it. But if they were to make it to the playoffs right now, which is a very high possibility, do you see them being that threat and saying, you know what, they learned their lessons here a little bit, and with the schedule coming up over here right now, do you see them going out there and just making a push?
Well, I see them making a push, but it depends on the defense, specifically the pass rush. Javion Clowney, everybody knows he's on the team. And, well, he doesn't have he gets there, he gets to the guy, he pressures him, but zero sacks. Well, we're not going to win any playoff game if Javion Clowney has zero sacks.
Right.
We signed Vic Beasley to a huge offseason deal, one-year deal, zero sacks. The pass rush has to get there because the secondary is good. Well, no secondary is great unless the pass rush is good. Everybody talks about a Legion of Boom with Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Sherman.
Sherman, yeah.
Well, what people forget is that Seattle pass rush was very good.
Mm-hmm.
But because the secondary was so great, nobody spoke about the pass rush. So, I mean, well, at the end of the day, I think they can go far. Offensively, I think they're there, Will, because we're not only depending on Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry, Will, this year has had games of 57 rushing yards and 84 rushing yards, and we're 2-0 in those games. Will, Ryan almost passed for 400 yards the other game. So we're not depending on the run game. The offense is there. We need the defense to come through. However, Will, Taylor Lewan, our franchise left tackle, tore up his knee, out for the year. Huge loss. So that concerns me, but I think that we definitely can.
Talk to us about Corey Davis.
So he was on the reserve list, the COVID list. I think the final number was 23, I want to say. He was one of the 23 players/staff that contracted COVID. He passed the test. He's good to go. Well, he was playing well up until he got sick. And, you know, I never thought he would be a number one, Will. And he reminds me of, the Islanders player that we always speak about. Dal Cole, right. He got drafted so high. And it's like, oh, he's only getting like 50 catches a year and 55. That's not number one. Sometimes a top 10 pick could be a great number two. Well, I think Corey can be a great number two. A.J. Brown is now our new number one, Will. So we've won the last three games when Corey Davis has not played. So he's back, and we need him against that vaunted Pittsburgh secondary, Will. So I am glad that he's back, pal.
I like how you say we, like you're a part of the team. I do it sometimes, too. It's okay. But the bottom line is, you know, when you put your heart and soul and rooting for some of these teams, it's, you know, you get so invested, you become one of them almost in a sense. So it's just,
do you know who the fourth string goaltender is for the New York Islanders, Will?
Let's see. We have Varley. We have Sorokin coming back. Greisser went to Detroit. Chris Gibson went down to Tampa Bay.
And he signed Corey
Schneider to a minor league deal, right?
Minor league deal. So technically, he's number three. Number four, Will, William Cherucci. That's who is the fourth goaltender for the New York Islanders. So, Will, when we say we, you're part of the team too, pal.
I get it.
Let's go, pal.
I love it. That's great.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Well, man, thank you for giving me my Titans spotlight. However, we are a New York-based podcast. We have to do it, Will. We have to do it. It doesn't have to be long. Actually, Will, it's going to be really, really brief because there's nothing really to talk about, Will. But the New York Jets, 0-6? 6 now? 0-6. 24-zip loss down in South Beach, a game that was pushed up because of the rescheduling. Will, I know you watched the game. I know you tweeted about
watched
the game.
Watched it? I watched the whole damn thing. I watched the whole damn thing. Okay. Here's my thought. Here's my couple of thoughts on the Jets, yes, and then we'll move on from here. Okay. First and foremost, every week I keep on saying this, and every week it's gonna be like this from here on out, depending on who this new head coach is. Adam Gase is gone. I don't care what anybody says. Chris Johnson's gonna let him in. He's gonna let him sleep in his bed at this point in time, number one. And number two, it's just horrible. But if people really think that Trevor Lawrence is this answer, is this can't-miss prospect, you guys need to have your head examined right now. This is not a quarterback situation right now at this point in time. This is a franchise that needs to be put back to life. They're on literal life support right now at this point in time. They are a disaster. They're a walking disaster, a train wreck, and a dumpster fire, as somebody on CNN said, okay? But regardless or not, the Jets still have holes on their offensive line. Have they been getting better? Yes. Has Mekhi Becton not played in 2 of the 5 games this year, or 6 games this year? The answer to that is yes. They traded Jamal Adams away at the time. I was like, on the move. But if you could get back draft capital for him, and he wanted out. Jamal wanted out. There's no question about it. He wanted out. Lev didn't want, it's not Le'Veon Bell. We mentioned it last week. The total opposite situation as to what happened with Lev. But in the grand scheme of things, and with some little context here, it's almost similar to Jamal Adams and why he left. But with everything going on, with everything that's been said with this team, it's just like, what free agents are going to want to come here? You're going to want guys that are going to have their heart and soul here, and you're going to want a head coach that's going to want these players here in order for them to succeed. So with that said, Sean, there's a lot of uncertainty here. If the Jets, been hearing a lot of rumors over the past couple of days, let alone the past week, that if the Jets were going to trade anybody, not we're going to trade anybody, but if the Jets are going to fire sale, I've been hearing Sam Darnold's name a lot, and they can only net back a second round pick or a third round pick or a mixture of both. I say don't do it. I say keep him. I think if Joe Douglas was smart, which he is, not questioning him at all because he's the GM, he's there, he's doing the thing for a reason. But here we are. We're talking about guys that can be game changers, right? I understand the injury history. I understand the Jets' problems together as a whole. He's part of it, Sam is. But like Mark Sanchez in 2012, and even in 2011, they gave this guy absolutely no receivers. They gave him no offensive line. They were still relying on DeBrickshaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold. And you can see that right now. Now, Joe Douglas is doing it as far as getting guys here. Getting guys here. He drafted Mekhi Becton. He signed guys to 1-year, 2-year deals. Fine. So be it. But it's a process, and Joel Embiid said it the best when they were going through the losing times. You have to trust the process. Am I throwing myself out of it right now? The answer is no. Playoffs are done. There's no playoffs. There's no hope. There's no glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. The franchise savior is still, in my opinion, Sam Darnold. It depends on what Joe Douglas brings to him, what head coach wants him here. And I hear it from Boomer and Geo. I hear it from Michael Kay. I hear it from so many Jet fans on my Instagram page telling me that they're all, you know, we're all Jet fans, that Sam Darnold is not the answer. And it's crazy to think that, because Sam Darnold was that generational type of talent that was coming through and walking through, and he was rated by many scouts and all these people that are on ESPN and such as the best quarterback in that 2018 draft. They went after Baker Mayfield. Look what he's doing right now with OBJ and Jarvis Landry. With a lineup, you know, with an offensive line that's kind of sort of somewhat put together. And you have a new head coach there that's an offensive-minded coach first. Pretty unbelievable. But you know what? At the end of the day, if Trevor Lawrence is this quote-unquote saving grace of the franchise, he threw for 5 touchdowns in the first half. I'm still not going to buy it. I don't really give a damn about any of that stuff, because at the end of the day, anybody can go out there that's playing in the SEC and can beat up on a lesser opponent. We've seen it so many times in college football where a top prospect has a big game and then all of a sudden he doesn't make it through the ranks. So I'm still a believer with Sam, and to get back to the Jets, everything's bad about them right now. I'm going to end this one here. They are one of the worst teams when it comes to penalties. They're not disciplined. Their secondary is still a wreck. And last week, I think I mentioned it to somebody, and even, I don't know if it was on here or not, Miami's offense in the red zone, they score. They can score. It's been proven. It's fact that they're a top 10 unit in the red zone to score points. So you do that against the Jets, you're going to, you know, win games and such. But, you know, for everybody out there that keeps on talking about Trevor Lawrence being this answer, you know, I think you need to reevaluate yourself here and say to yourself, there are other problems there besides the quarterback spot. And it's all team win, team loss. I understand that. But the bottom line here is with the Jets, they are not whole. And the quarterback, after year 3, we still don't know what he is. Now, we'll see what happens in the offseason. But again, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. And, you know, we got to see what happens during this offseason, because a lot of fans are dreaming of week 17 of 2020 coming up. So we'll see what happens with this franchise going forward. But it's become watchable, not unwatchable, watchable, to the point where, what are they going to do wrong next? Butt fumble times a million. I'll leave it like that.
Well, you know, at this point, it seems like either Christopher Jones is waiting for the bye week or waiting to the end of the season to get rid of Gase. The thing is, Gase has power within the team. I know, like, we speak about it.
He brought Joe Douglas over.
He brought Joe Douglas, right. And we speak about that all the time. So it's like, to me, it's like, does Adam Gase run Christopher too? Does Christopher run Gase? Well, these are questions that we don't know because of the power that Adam Gase supposedly has. Well, it's not a guarantee Adam Gase gets fired at the end of the year. Adam Gase could be the coach of the 2021 Jets. We have no clue because we don't know the power that he has or the lack thereof, because, well, it's clear Woody and Christopher, they don't care about football. They care about business. And they're like, all right, fine. We have a guy in place. We got the franchise guy in place, blah, blah, blah. So, well, we have to see what happens there. In terms of Sam, well, I agree with you. It's hard to tell if Sam is or isn't the franchise because he's been so hurt, number one. But number two, when he's been healthy enough to play, he's shown the glimpses, the flashes, but he doesn't have the support around him in terms of a good offensive line, skill guys, a back, so on and so forth. But the last thing the Jets need to do is to bring another quarterback in.
And the only reason why A lot of people want Trevor Lawrence here. Forget, and this is why I don't understand. People read into the hype machine so much of ESPN, and they watch SportsCenter or read up on Bleacher Report and such, and they see the Jets' record, and they look at Trevor Lawrence or anybody of that nature, and they automatically, oh, Sam's a bust. What's he doing? Bro, Aaron Rodgers right now and Tom Brady or even Peyton Manning or Joe Montana will throw any quarterback, any Hall of Fame quarterback that's in future Hall of Fame quarterback, even Russell Wilson. They're not changing this team. The franchise is inept. You know, it's every year. The drafting has been horrible year in and year out. This is more than a quarterback problem. This is a franchise that has been in shambles now for a decade. Jet fans are pissed off. I am too with it. And it just keeps on, you know, you keep on getting the same bag of goods. And it's just one thing leads to another. It's, you think that you're getting a new TV show, but really it's a recycled product of the same shit that's been going on over and over and over again. And it just, as a Jets fan, it gets ridiculous to watch and even listen to.
It does, Will. It definitely does. But, Will, now I will say this. Trevor Lawrence is going to be amazing. He's the next Joe Montana. I believe it. I see it. However, he is not going to be the next Joe Montana for the Jets simply because the Jets don't need Trevor Lawrence. He's not a need. He's a want. And right now, the Jets have way too many needs to be drafting a guy that's a want. That's what it should come down to. Well, I heard this on, I think Shannon Sharp said this, or it may have been Skip. One of them said, if I am Sean Payton, I call the Jets tomorrow and offer whatever for Sam. Well, I'm not sure. I am not so sure Adam Gase will tell the Saints no. That's how inept that the Jets are.
It's not Adam Gase. It's not Adam Gase. It's really up to Joe Douglas to make that move.
Well, you know? I think Adam Gase runs Joe Douglas too. I really do. I really do. And if you're the Saints, well, if the Jets trade Sam and they draft Trevor, they're going to be in the same position next year while Sam is playing for the Saints or for Tampa or for the Bears or for another team that actually cares and supports him. And his team is going to go 12-4, 13-3, and everybody's going to be like, whoops, I guess we missed out on that one.
and that's the thing. And this is why I kind of hate social media to a degree, because of the fact that you have some people out there with some ridiculous takes and some bad takes. But it's just like, if you're blaming Sam for everything, you have to look at the picture as a whole. Football is a team game. Like life, football is a team game. And if you blame one man, you're going to lose out all the time. It's all about, in football, it's about the offensive line protecting the quarterback. It's about the defense going out there and shutting opponents down. So that's where, you know, with everything going on, and everybody keeps on, I hear from Joe and Evan, Joe Beningo especially, being the lifelong Jet fan that he is, you know, it's just, it just gets to a point where you're just listening into the talking heads, and it just, you know, you can't entertain the thought, you know, with it. Give it at least. And another thing too, you have Trevor Lawrence, and people are so enamored with, oh, rookie contract, they got to build up here. That's what the Seahawks did with Russell Wilson. I understand that. But, you know, if you go out there and you spend money like the Jets do on free agents all the time, it's not, and it hasn't been working along with the drafting situation here, it hasn't worked. So there is that, you know. And if the Jets could go out there and legitimately find a way to fix it up, in which they say to Sam, hey, listen, behind closed doors, we know that we're bad. If Joe Douglas goes up to him or Christopher Johnson goes up to him and says, look, Sam, listen, you're our guy no matter what. Behind closed doors, behind where there's no media and such, you're our guy. We believe in you. And that's it. Now, 0-16 right now is a possibility. I get it. But, you know, it's just this is a dark time. But the court, like I said, the quarterback situation here in New York, I don't think that it's the problem. I think it's the overall franchise. But Sean, let's move on from this because this is just getting repetitive and bad. I see.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Well, my final thought, it may not get better until the Jets do what the Mets just did. And a team and somebody with a lot of cash wants to buy. And, Will, I've seen you tag this man's name before. I think Gary V would be a fabulous owner of a professional team because the man actually cares about sports. Business is his first love and everything that he does. But I honestly think Gary V, if Gary, he ever gets his hand on a professional team, Will, I think he'll be outstanding.
Gary V and a couple of investors. That's the key. Investors. Investors need to go with Gary V. Correct. Investors need to go with whoever the next Jet owner is, with the exception of, you know, this billionaire tycoon, whoever it is. And they have to buy this franchise. They have to. Because this franchise is literally on the verge of disaster. And one more thing. You know, we mentioned Gary V. He's a Jets fan.
He is.
He's a Jets fan. He literally can't. He'll do anything for the Jets in order for them to succeed. So there is that hope, and there's that, you know, that passion that Gary Vaynerchuk brings. And we've had on AJ Vaynerchuk on our podcast, his brother that's running Vayner Sports right now and also is a part of Vayner Media. But, you know, there's a lot of things going on there. And for the Jets in general, there's a lot that needs to be said with them, but we'll see what happens during the off season. But I'm still going to keep watching this team, even though it's 6 weeks in, I'm still going to watch them. So it's definitely not going to change for sure.
Speaking of watching them, the Jets Sunday at 1 o'clock take on the Bills. Me and Will will discuss that later on. Well, going from gangrene to big blue, Will, me and you predicted this one correctly. The Giants finally got their first win, a 20-19 win over the Washington football team. Barely got the win. Well, the football team went for two and they didn't get it. Giants ran out the clock. Well, I am happy for the Giants because they've been close. The Bears game was close. The Cowboys game was close. Other games were super close. They finally got this one. And Will, the Giants are 1-5. They're a game out of the NFC East lead. That is ridiculous. Because the Cowboys lead at 2-4. Well, what's your take on the now 1-5 New York Giants?
Here's my take. I'm going to keep this one short and sweet because I really didn't watch that much of it outside of the Daniel Jones drive in which he scrambled for 46 yards on that quarterback keeper. The Giants are, you know, if they could find a way, and Sean, you said it, if good teams can go out there and find a way to win games and, you know, they're a good team and such, and they can find a way to go out there and win, then I feel as if the Giants can go out there and spark a magical run with this division being as weak as it is. People keep on talking about Dallas trying to find a way, and now you're hearing rumblings that, you know, they're not really prepping right for games in Dallas. And, you know, Mike McCarthy, many people are second-guessing it and blowing it up out of proportion because of the fact that it's the Cowboys, it's America's team and such. So we'll see what happens with Dallas. But the main thing here is that the Giants, they found a way to win. And, you know, for those people out there that say that Daniel Jones is not the answer, the only problem with Daniel Jones that I have is his protection of the football, a la like Eli Manning was back in his earlier years where he couldn't really protect the football and such. But outside of that, though, Danny Dimes is literally like I think he might be that face of the franchise for them. I really do. He's proven a lot right now. He's trying to go out there and make things happen. The defense for the Giants is doing good, but they're doing all three facets, you know, well. They could be, you know, 2-3 or 3-2 or whatever, or 3-3. But the bottom line here is, you know, like the Jets, the Giants have to find a way to go out there and compete. And they compete every week, unlike the Jets. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. Sean, what's your take on the Giants?
I'm happy that they got the win because they've been so close. They've been going for it. 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 And they finally got the job done. The defense came through against a third-string quarterback, but still, the defense came through. And, well, like you said, if Daniel Jones finds a way to hold on to the football more, the kid's got some talent. I see what the Giants saw 2 years ago. I see what they, you know what I'm saying, saw in them. And, you know, the Giants have found a way to put up points. Saquon isn't there. But, well, Devontae Freeman has been a godsend for this team. And I was actually surprised that a team that a contending team didn't pick him up because the guy could still catch. The guy could still run. He was always known as one of the best pass blocking backs in the league. So the Giants got him. So we shall see what happens there. But yeah, well, I'll keep it short and sweet with them because, well, but I'm just happy they got the win. And, well, they could make it two wins because the Giants actually play tomorrow, Thursday night at Philly. Philly 1-4-1 against 1-5. Well, the winner of that game could be in a tie for first place in the NFC East. That is just crazy.
Amazing. It's amazing.
It's really amazing. Well, before we get to picks, pal, any storylines from week number 6?
You know, the Browns, I wasn't surprised with the Browns losing to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, year in and year out, they find a way. They have the Browns number at home, especially. You know, the Dolphins, how about today? Tua is going to be the starting quarterback now for the Dolphins. So Ryan Fitzpatrick was heartbroken, and I feel for him. But Brian Flores is trying to make some waves, and he's trying to learn. Not learn, but he's trying to pull like a Belichick in a sense, you know, trying to get some storylines here. But realistically, I think it's the right move. You know, Fitzpatrick is a stopgap quarterback, and we got to see what happened when he was, especially being a Jet fan. The 1 year he went 10-6, and they should have made it to the playoffs had it not been for, you know, Fitzpatrick having a bad game. You know, let the kid play. Let this kid play. Let him see what happens. It's a lot of pressure on him. But you look at the following season with Fitzpatrick in 2016 and how defenses and teams just found a way to go out there and do it. You know, let Tua play. See what happens. And also with Dolphins, they couldn't convert on third down against the Jets. So, you know, as much as I shit on them earlier, the Jets in the second half literally shut down the Dolphins' offense. And, you know, you got to find a way to go out there and win games. Unfortunately, the Jets don't have their guy or anybody on that team for that matter because their season's over. But the Dolphins, I think this is the right move for them. If they can find a way to move the football and, they, you know, and Brian Flores liked what he saw from Tua coming out in his little time and he's seeing what he likes in practice, go for it. See what happens.
Well, I look at my storylines, bro, from week number 6. And, of course, my Titans being a 5-0, I got to point out them. Well, but a couple storylines. The Dallas Cowboys, yikes. Monday night, that was not a good sight. Yeah. You know, we knew they would miss Dak. Woof, that was bad against Arizona team that's good, but not like that great of a team. So the Cowboys there will also, well, it's happened. I think this is the third time now a team fires their coach and the same week the team wins. The Falcons went up to Minnesota after firing Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, and they blew out Minnesota. So that was one also.
One more thing. How about Denver going into New England and winning? You know, Cam Newton coming back 2 weeks from COVID. Drew Lock not throwing a single touchdown. But, you know, the Denver Broncos find a way on the road to go out and upset the New England Patriots at New England. So that's pretty amazing right there.
That definitely is a good point. Well, I got two more very, very quick ones. Well, do you know who's the second leading receiver in the NFL?
Second leading receiver.
In terms of receiving yards.
No, I don't. Who?
I thought you would get the me asking you because it's a former Jet. Robbie Anderson.
Wow.
He's only behind DK. Oh, sorry. He's only behind Stephon Diggs. He's only behind Stephon Diggs for the NFL lead. And Will, Robbie is ahead of Metcalf, Julio, Devontae Adams, Mike Evans, all these big name wide receiver ones. Will, it's, I mean, we knew he would play well because former coach is Matt Rhule, so he knows the all, but I was not expecting through week six Robbie Anderson to be leading, to be almost leading the NFL in receiving yards. Will, add number two. Will, my final thing is, Will, we didn't really get into this much except for a little bit brief. Like you said, the Jets trading away Le'Veon Bell. It was between the Chiefs, Dolphins, and the Bills. He picks the Chiefs, and he really picked the Chiefs because of cash, because the Jets still got to pay him the $6 million base, and the Chiefs, I think, gave him like 1.8 to sign. So he's getting off with 7.8. That's pretty good in terms of, you know, whatever the case is. Will, when the Chiefs go five wide in a five-wide set, Patrick Mahomes is going to throw the ball to either Clyde Edwards, Le'Veon Bell, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, or Tyreek Hill. That is scary. Will, somebody told me you might as well give the Chiefs the trophy right now, and I'm leaning towards that way. Because as great as the defense of the Steelers are, the Chiefs could go five wide the whole game. Nobody stopping those five dudes. Nobody. So I think, and well, it clearly shows you that Bell wants to win. He could have went to the Bills and got paid. He could have went to South Beach where he lives and got paid. The man wants to win, and he went to Andy Reid. Well, Andy Reid is going to do something with Le'Veon Bell. Bell.
God hoping. I hope he wins that Lombardi Trophy this year for sure.
Definitely hope so for Le'Veon Bell's sake. So, Will, let's get into the picks. Well, before we get into the picks, Will, you almost had a perfect week in week number six. You went 12-1. Do you want to take a guess at the game that you lost, Will? Just take a wild guess.
The Broncos-Patriots game.
No, because that actually counted for week five. So I put that one for week five since it was supposed to be played week five. Instead of doing it week six, the fact that the game was played, I just counted it for the week five stats.
Okay. No. Which game?
Well, the only game you got wrong was the Rams at San Francisco. The only one you got wrong.
The Sunday night game.
The Sunday night game. You went 12-1.
How about you? How'd you do?
I went 10-3, Will. So, well, I finally have the updated standings for all 6 weeks. I am 62-28-1. Will, you are right on my tail at 59-31-1. Will, because that 12-1 week, it got you right back in it, Will. It got you right back in it.
Did.
So it definitely did. So again, 62-28-1 for me, 59-31-1 for Will. Will, let's get right into picks. Will, starting with Thursday night, Giants at Philly. The winner is in a tie for first place. Will, who you got?
You know what? Who's the favorite in this one?
Philly.
Upset special of the week, Giants. Thursday night, Danny Dimes shows up. Philly, they're not looking too hot. I think the Giants find a way to turn their season around. And like you said, Sean, you know, if they could go out there, they're pumping on adrenaline right now and they're feeling right on this Thursday, I think they're going to win. Give me the G-Men on the road.
Well, upset special. Will, if Carson Wentz is ever going to prove that he's the franchise guy, you have to win this game. You have to win this game. They're calling for your head. The Philly fans are booing you left and right. Will, I think he finds a way. I'm not confident, but I think he finds a way. Give me Philly at home.
And this is coming from a guy that actually picked the Eagles to win the division. So, right. I just want to see something positive from New York. I want to see Danny Dimes succeed. As much as I dislike Giants fans, we're always chirping in my ear about 1968, Joe Namath, everything like that. I'm actually rooting for the Giants for once. Giants upset special.
There you have it. Well, on to Sunday, the Panthers will be traveling to New Orleans, taking on the Saints coming off a bye week. Panthers at Saints, Will, who you got?
Who's the favorite in this one?
New Orleans.
Give me New Orleans at home. Going to keep that one short and sweet.
Yeah, well, I think the bye week came at a perfect time for them. Michael Thomas is back. Give me the Saints as well. Well, we're going to move on from this one. The Bills at the Jets. I think we know where you're going, and I'm
next.
Going with
next.
This one. So.
You know what, though? With the Bills, their defense, the last couple of years, they've been ranking in top 10. This year, they're ranked in total defense, like, in the bottom tier of the league. And they have Josh Allen with Stephon Diggs being the best passing stats receiver right now in the game. But, you know, the Jets, they found a way. If there's one bright spot, they found a way to shut down Miami's offense last week in the second half, with the exception of the field goal. But regardless or not, give me the Bills.
Well, I'm going to take the Bills as well. I'm going to keep that one short and sweet. I think the Bills get right this week. Will a AFC North showdown, the Cleveland Browns are at Cincinnati taking on the Bengals. Will, who wins the Battle of Ohio, Cincy or Cleveland?
I'm going to go Cleveland here. I think Cleveland, you know, they got punched in the face. I think Baker Mayfield doesn't have the same game that he did last week, this week against Cincinnati. Cincinnati, on the other hand, you know, they're in so many games. They find ways to, you know, to keep games close or, you know, I hate to say it, lose games. But I'm going to go Cleveland here. I think Baker Mayfield shows to the world that, hey, you know what? I got punched in the face. I'm going to come back up with the team that he has right now, with everything going on. Give me the Browns.
Well, give me the Browns as well. I think, well, Cincy, that was a bad loss for them against the Colts. That was a real bad loss for them.
Yeah.
Having the Colts come all the way back. So give me Cleveland as well. Well, moving on, the Dallas Cowboys are on the road, a NFC East matchup. They fly to Washington to take on the football team. Well, Cowboys at Washington, who you got?
This is tough. This is legitimately tough. Because Dallas's defense, they got punched in the face. You know, talking about getting punched in the face. But Washington, though, their front seven is still legit. And this is just such a bad matchup. I'm going to go Dallas, but I really would not be surprised if Washington comes away with a victory here. But give me Dallas.
Well, I think Dallas has too much talent. Like, I mean, you started hearing some reports today that Mike McCarthy, they don't have faith in him. Well, we could be seeing Mike McCarthy coaching for his job in game number 7. But I think Dallas gets the job done. I think they find a way to squeak out a win. So give me the Cowboys on the road. Well, the Green Bay Packers travel down south to Houston to take on the Houston Texans. Well, Packers at Houston, who you got?
Packers, short and sweet.
Yeah, Packers coming off their first loss. I think they get right against that terrible secondary that is Houston. But at least they've been playing well since they fired their coach. But I'm going to go Packers as well. Well, the Detroit Lions travel down south to take on the Dirty Birds, the Atlanta Falcons coming off their first win. Well, Matthew Stafford against Matt Ryan. Well, who you got?
Wow. This is going to be a high-scoring affair. I'm going to go with the Lions, strictly because of the fact that Matthew Stafford just finds a way to win games. And I think this is one of them. So, yeah, and Matt Patricia's coaching for his job, too. Give me the Lions on the road.
Well, the Falcons have only played one game within the NFC South. That was against the Panthers 2 weeks ago. I think if they could win these games against non-NFC South opponent teams, the rest of the division is right in front of them, and I think they're going to capitalize. Give me the Falcons at home, Will. Will, the game of the week, we just spoke about it to open the show, Will. The 5-0 Pittsburgh Steelers are at my 5-0 Tennessee Titans. Will, unless this game comes out in a tie, somebody will remain undefeated. Somebody would have that loss, Will. Steelers at Titans, who you got?
I'm going to go Steelers here. I know you mentioned it earlier. Your left tackle is out. That is huge. That's a huge loss. I think Pittsburgh, they always find a way to stymie the opponent. And especially since Ryan Tannehill is having himself a career year. The same can be also said with Derrick Henry. I like Pittsburgh a lot here in this spot. So give me Pittsburgh.
Well, as much as I want to pick my Titans, I got to go with Pittsburgh, the better team. But more importantly, the defense. The better defense is with the Steelers. I think both teams are going to put up some points, but I think Pittsburgh gets a couple stops, probably wins the game by 7 or 10 points. Give me Pittsburgh on the road. Well, a very interesting game, a NFC West showdown. Seattle coming off a bye week travels to Arizona, taking the Cardinals, Will. Hawks at Cards, Battle of the Birds, Will. Who you got?
Going Seahawks, short and sweet.
Well, I'm going to go with the Seahawks as well. One of three remaining undefeated teams. I think they keep that going, even though the Cardinals have given them some issues at home, but I think Seattle gets the job done. Well, this one is probably going to be short and sweet as well. The defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs are in Denver to take on the Broncos. Well, Chiefs and Broncos, who you got?
Man, did anybody see Denver, outside of the Bronco fans, did anybody see Denver winning that game last week?
No, sir.
I'm going to go Kansas City, short and sweet.
Well, I'm going to go with Kansas City as well. I think it'll be a close game because those in-division games tend to be close, but give me the Chiefs there as well. Well, the Jacksonville Jaguars travel west to take on the Los Angeles Chargers, also coming off a bye week. Will Gardner, Minshew, or Justin Herbert, Will? Who you got?
Justin Herbert, short and sweet, Chargers.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with the Chargers as well. Coming off a bye week, I think the bye week came at the perfect time for Justin to kind of, you know, have everything slow down for him. He's been going at warp speed. Well, probably the second best game of the week here, depending on who you ask, Will. The San Francisco 49ers, coming off their second win of the season, travel east to take on the, well, you just said it, the New England Patriots. Jimmy G coming back to New England. Well, who you got, 49ers at Patriots?
This is tough, bro. This is a tough matchup here. Screw it. I'm going to go with the Patriots. Short and sweet. Patriots.
Will, going with the Patriots. Well, I'm going to go with San Fran. They've already come east twice. Yes, I know it was against the Jets and the Giants. But coming east is not going to bother them at all. I think they're going to go into the Patriots world, and I think they're going to get that win. I honestly do. I think their offense will play better. And I think they'll stymie Cam just enough to get that win. So give me San Fran. Well, a very interesting Sunday night game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Las Vegas Raiders, the last team that's coming off a bye week. Well, Bucs at Raiders, who you got?
Let's go Raiders. Let's go Raiders here, trying to shock the world. I'm going to go with the Raiders.
Well, upset special. I think the Raiders are going to get this one as well Sunday night. Even though they've already had a Monday night game at their place when they beat the Saints, I think the Raiders, coming off a bye week, 2 weeks to prepare for Tampa Bay, I think John Gruden is going to have those guys ready to go. Give me the Raiders. And, well, last but not least, the Monday night game, a very interesting one at that, a battle of four win teams. the 4-2 Chicago Bears will are taking on the 4-2 Los Angeles Rams in LA. Will, who you got to close out picks? Will, Chicago at LA.
I'm going to keep this one short and sweet. I'm going to go with the Rams here. I like the Rams. I like them a lot. Again, Donald and Ramsey are unbelievable. They are. And how can you have one guy that's a game changer on the front seven and you have a guy that's a game changer on the secondary? I'll never know. Plus, Nick Foles, I think he's going to have a, nightmare of a game. So give me the Rams on Monday Night Football.
Well, I think it's going to be a defensive battle, but give me the Rams as well, only because they're at home. If this was in Chicago, I think I'd lean towards the Bears, but I think the Rams will get it done at home. So, Will, those are your picks for week number 7. Like I said, I'm 62-28-1. Will is 59-31-1. So there you have it for the picks. Well, before we end the show, we got to talk about a little baseball here, Will, as we saw the Tampa Bay Rays close out the Houston Astros in 7. Will, it had a lot of MLB fans scared. How could the players that cheat, how could they go to the World Series? Tampa Bay, what are you doing? Tampa Bay closed them out in 7 games. And, Will, give the Dodgers some credit. Coming back from 3-1 against a very good Braves team to win that series. And speaking of win, Will, last night the Dodgers opened it up late in that game, going up 8-1, eventually winning 8-3 over Tampa Bay to go up 1-0. Will, what's your take on the latest events with MLB?
I'm going to keep this short and sweet here because I fell asleep after the Cody Bellinger home run. Not because of the fact that it was boring, but because I had work in the morning. I wake up early for work. For those people that don't know, I'm an electrician and stuff, so I'm working on the rails, and, you know, you got to have your wits about you, what, you know, seeing everything going on. The one thing that I could say is that, you know, Glasnow and Kershaw, they came out great. They came out firing. You know, but when you're a young pitcher, and like Tyler Glasnow in that case, and he made a mistake to Bellinger, he did. You know, Bellinger found his groove, and he really couldn't hit for a lick in both the NLDS and the NLCS because of him being crowded. He found a pitch that he liked. He golfed it. It was really the icebreaker right there, if you will. And they found a way to win. And for Clayton Kershaw, for every troll out there, please just, you know, I heard it on the Michael Kay show yesterday, and I heard Michael Kay and Peter Rosenberg and LaGreca and all those guys talking to Buster Olney about Clayton Kershaw. If this is the most important game of his career, please stop with this stuff, okay? And the man's a Hall of Famer regardless or not. Yes, he's had a couple of bad playoff appearances, but you know what, though? At that same point in time, you know, he found a way to go out there and win a game last night. He did. And the experience shows that if you go out there with the off-speed stuff against the lineup that's really expecting fastball, chances are you're going to win games. You are. And Kershaw is one of the best pitchers to ever do it. I remember in high school, you know, senior year of high school, I'll never forget, they had on Baseball Tonight before ESPN went to shit, you know, when they had all the sports on. And they had Baseball Tonight, and they had Kruk and Ravitch and company talking about Clayton Kershaw being this number one prospect for the Dodgers. And I got to watch him pitch at Shea Stadium back in 2008, the final year of Shea Stadium. I got to see this kid play in his second or third start ever in the big leagues. And I'm telling my boy, you know, watch out for this kid. This kid's going to be hot. And this is a 17-year-old that watched Baseball Tonight telling my friend that. And the kid made, you know, he gave up 5 runs in his Shea Stadium debut. But the point was that he was making the hitters off balance and finding a way to go out there and make them foolish. And stuff that you don't see anymore, you know, with the off-speed stuff, the curveball that he's got.
Yeah, that's the Clayton Kershaw that I grew up with. And, you know, everybody keeps on telling me, Will, you know, you were right on about Clayton Kershaw. I'm like, I saw it on ESPN and seeing the mental makeup that he has with the mechanics and the way how he's throwing, this kid's going to be a stud. And, you know, 12 years later, he's in the World Series again, third time in 4 years in the World Series. You know, I think I'm still keeping my prediction with the Rays, but everybody that keeps on talking with Clayton Kershaw needs to stop at this point. They just have to, because they're embarrassing themselves right now at this point in time. And I, like I said, I get the postseason ghost, everything like that. He's A-Rod, but you win game one last night. You set the tone here for the series for now. Everything's looking up right now for the Dodgers. And for the Dodgers, they have to, you know, they find a way to win the game last night. Backbreaker off the glass now. They got to the Rays bullpen. And the Dodgers, you know, they have retribution in their mind against playing up against the Astros. In 2017, they thought they should have won that. They got cheated out of it, of course. The Red Sox in 2018 got cheated out of that somewhat to a degree. These guys are hungry. And they, you know, with a little bit of luck in 2019 with Howie Kendrick hitting it off at Clayton, you know, they're hungry for this World Series. And I definitely see that, but I'm still sticking with my Rays in seven. So we'll see what happens there. Sean, what are your thoughts on the World Series?
Yeah, I think these are the two best teams in MLB. Obviously, it was only 60 games, Will. But, well, remember last week when we were wrapping up the 2020 New York Yankees, Will? And remember I made a point. I said I feel the Yankees would have been better off with more games.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel they, you know, 60 games was enough for them to really become the team they needed to be. Well, I think for the Dodgers, I think some of their mishaps in the World Series and the playoffs that they've lost is because they've been playing for too long. The Dodgers know who they are, what they could be. I think the longer the season, the worse it is for them, because they're like, look, we just want to get to the playoffs. We just want to get to the playoffs. Like, we all know we're going to win 100 games, 105 games. We're going to win the NL West, which I think they've done the past, what, like eight seasons now or something of that sort.
Right.
So, what I think the 60-game season was perfect for them. As we saw, they were the best team. What did they go, 41 and 19 or something 40, like that?
Something like that, yeah. Some in the 40s.
Some in the 40s. So, well, that proves my point. The shorter the season, the better for them. And I think that's why they're catching Tampa at the right time. Well, if they would have caught Tampa after 90 games, 100 games, I would lead Tampa. Regardless, I think it's going to go seven games. I think the Rays are actually going to win game two. And, well, it won't surprise me if Tampa's up 2-1 or 3-2 at some point. But the Dodgers with Snell and, well, these other young guys, like, the guy with the hair, Will, May?
Dustin May, yeah.
Dustin May, Will, I mean, I know he struggled in game seven, but he's another arm and so on and so forth. So I think the Dodgers will get it done and finally bring a championship home. And, well, if they do, LA's going to be buzzing. The Lakers just won. Now the Dodgers have a chance to win. And the Rams, you know, you don't know what could happen with of them, so we shall see what happens there. Well, that does it. Oh, well, actually, before we end the show with MLB, it's 90% official. Sportico reported yesterday that Steve Cohen's bid for the Mets was approved by 29 of the MLB owners. The only owner to not approve of it, Jerry Reinsdorf of Chicago.
Really? Of the White Sox.
The White Sox, Jerry Reinsdorf.
Wow.
But I read somewhere, Will, that he's not a Steve Cohen fan. Like, he hasn't been a Steve Cohen guy outside of sports. So it was expected that he would be, you know, one or the only one. So Bud Williston, 29-1. Will Steve Cohen, at a value of $14.2 billion, has more money than the next three owners of the MLB combined?
Right. I saw that too.
Will, I'm excited. Not because he's going to spend, but we got a guy that cares. Will, just how Gary V, his pockets run deep and he cares about the Jets. Steve Cohen, lifelong fan of the Mets, his pockets run deep. I'm excited because now you're hearing the names.
You should be.
Thank you, Will. And now you're hearing the names. Arenado, Lindor, Springer, Bauer. I'm not saying we're going to get all those guys, one of those guys, two of those guys, but just the fact that those guys are in the convo, Will, I'm excited.
Here's the thing with Steve Cohen. There's a difference between Steve Cohen and Gary Vee. Gary Vee is a Jets fan, and he cares about his team. Steve Cohen is looking at this probably as a business investment. And for every Met fan out there, I love it that, you know, the Mets are getting a new face of their franchise as far as ownership goes. But like any other owner, with the exception of the Islanders right now with John Ledecky and Scott Malkin, and especially with Ledecky taking pictures with the fans and stuff, and he's watching from the last row at National Coliseum or at Barclays Center and talking to the fans and such and taking photos with fans, you have to see how much of an owner this guy is. You know, he could go out there and pay the bills and such, but when me personally, which isn't going to happen because it's A, he's in the New York media and the New York Eye, and I'm not saying to be like John Ledecky at all or anything like that, but the bottom line here is, you know, show some initiative with the fans. Don't be that guy. Do not be that owner that's going to go out and, you know, be like a James Dolan and try and be like antisocial and stuff, or any type of owner that's just like socially awkward. Embrace it. Embrace the fans. Embrace everything that comes with being an owner of a franchise. And, you know, just case in point, just look at John Ledecky. That's all I'm saying. And with the Mets, you know, you could talk about spending of the money. They had Omar Minaya as GM. They spent the money on those guys. It didn't really turn into anything at all. They choked down the stretch in 07 and in 08. Jason Bay especially. I think I struck a chord there with you on that one. Every Met fan right there. Jason Bay, spend money, huh? Yeah, you guys
remember that. That was definitely bad. But, Will, everything you're hearing is that he's not going to spend crazy. He wants to overhaul the analytics apartment, which I think, you know, if he wants to do that, that's fine. Him and Sandy have a blueprint of how they want the team to run. And go, he's a fan. He's not a passionate guy like Gary Vee, but Steve Cohen has been spotted at games wearing the Mets hat. Low key. I don't want nobody to know that I'm here. Low key, scarf on his face, yada, yada, yada. But he's been there. But the thing is, to me, that he's not going to spend. He's not going to trade for Francisco Lindor and then give him $400 million. He's not going to sign Trevor Bauer for $250. He's not going to do those things. Well, I think he's going to – and, well, he even told everybody, he knows within the first 2 years of owning this team, he's going to lose $500 million. But like you said, that's the business in aspect. That's what he's willing to put in, knowing that the return over time will be 400 times 20. That's what he's really looking at. But, well, I think the reason why he cares is he hired Sandy Alderson. Now they got to go out and hire a GM that can make the moves. Well, I'm waiting for the Chicago Cubs to get rid of Theo and Epstein. I'm praying that takes place. But just if somebody that could just come in here and get the job done. Or, well, if the Yankees do what you want them to do and fire Brian Cashman, well, I will gladly take him over here in Queens.
He would fit. Listen, he would fit with the analytics. He would. I understand that. Maybe if he's up for a challenge, he should go for it. But again, with the I'm just going to keep it short and sweet. 19 out of 20 years, you know, they haven't won the World Series. I understand it to the fullest degree. And You know, you look at successful seasons and stuff. You know, you make it to the postseason, that's great. But, you know, you're the Yankees. You go out there, you win the World Series. You got the George Steinbrenner effect on you. If you don't win the World Series or if you don't make it to the World Series, it's not good. It's not good enough. But, you know, they got to find a way to go out and see what happens. 2021, next season, that's it. But as far as the Mets go, man, good for you guys. I'm happy for you guys. I saw that, and that's pretty much about it on the Mets for sure. But I'm happy for them. I really am because, you know, seeing them lose out over time, it's just not – it's not good. It's not good for the city. It's not good for the sport. Yeah, the Yankees and the Mets don't play in the same division, but they do play in the same market, and you do feel for them and their fans in that sense. But it's definitely good to see for sure.
It definitely is. Will, final thoughts. I know you have a very special hockey final thought. So, Will,
yes,
the floor is yours.
Shout out to Mike Emmerich, Doc. Great guy. I've never met him, but I would love to meet him one day. I would love to have him on this podcast and talk hockey with him, talk baseball with him. He's a big baseball fan. And coming from Indiana, you know, he probably knows a thing or two about the Pacers, about the Hoosiers, the, you know, basketball state being what it is. I would definitely love to chew on his ear and just to talk with him about broadcasting games, some of his favorite moments and stuff. But that's just a pipe dream. The real thing here is, and the real shout out here is to you, Mike, for going out there and making a wonderful 47-year career of broadcasting hockey games, giving us hockey fans some of the more timeless moments with your calls and, you know, some of your quirks about you. It's just unbelievable that you're leaving. I actually should be coming in today that his book, he came out with the book. It got released today. I think it's kind of funny how he retired yesterday and his book came out I think yesterday. So this is a great way to go out there and market yourself and try and make it happen. So Mike, you're a genius. Shout out to you for doing it. We're gonna miss you. And also on the future of hockey broadcasting, Sean, I know we talked about this off the air and we've had on two guests that are really relevant in the hockey world. John Forslund will probably be the next lead man for the NHL on NBC. Always love hearing John. I think John's one of the better guys in the league to call a game. He brings the energy, he brings the passion, he brings the knowledge of the sport to the game. And if there's one thing that that we've got to hear and see from the observations of hearing John talk, he's a teacher. And he said it. He wanted to be a teacher, and he makes watching the game fun. He makes learning the game a lot of fun. And he just, there's that flair about him that he just brings to the game, especially if the game is close. You know that he's going to bring his A game to it. So I definitely can't wait to see who the next voice is for the NHL, for their national televised games in America. But John is definitely up there. I think he's number one on the list for sure. And then another guy that we had on, Sean, who's going to be probably replacing John when it's all said and done here, when John retires, and that's Brendan Burke. Brendan Burke is young. Islander broadcaster. We've had him on our podcast. He's 34. He's a pup in our eyes, albeit he's older than us. You four, me three. But, you know, he's definitely the future. He's definitely going to be the future voice of whoever the whatever TV contract is going to get it, whether it be ESPN, ABC, or, you know, NBC or Fox or whatever it is, or some network that we probably never even heard of that's going to be growing. So, you know, those two guys are going to be great. And, you know, you can't replace the Hockey Hall of Famer, but the NHL and NBC right now, they have two good guys that are waiting in the wings right now. And the one guy in the interim, and John Forslund, is definitely that. And one more thing to add to that, Sean.
you know, I don't understand why the Carolina Hurricanes have not given this guy a contract yet. Because this guy is the face of the Hurricanes. And, you know, it's tough to go out there and do games and from nationally broadcasting a game down in, you know, let's say Pittsburgh to go back to Carolina or out on the West Coast. It's tough to do it, you know. I've never done it as far as broadcast games go, you know, trying to travel like that. But it's got to be tough on not only the body, but on the mind as well doing that. And, you know, John should be asking for at least some sort of hefty pay scale for sure. A pay grade, a pay raise, if you will. So that's definitely something to see here. But yeah, shout out to Doc and shout out to John Forslund and Brendan Burke as well.
Well said, Will. Well said, Will. I'm going to keep my take on Doc short and sweet. Well, I've only been really getting into hockey the past maybe 5, 6, 7 years, so on and so forth. The number one, well, when you type in the word hockey, Doc Emrick name pops up almost instantly. That's how notorious he is known within the sport. And, you know, Will, and what I'm always going to remember about him calling games is his voice, like that little, an accent that he has.
It's that energy that he brings.
And the energy and the accent that he has. And just like, well, like, we know the famous guys by their voice. We know Vin Scully by his voice. You know, Mr. Michael Cave by his voice. He, obviously, you being a fan of the team, well, we know John Sterling by his voice. You know what I'm saying? The Yankees win. Like, we just know and know these guys. And Doc is one of those things where it shows, he scores! Like, just the... like just the excitement
that Mike Doc brings too, right.
Mike brings bang, yeah. And everybody too. We just know about these guys. Well, Doc is up there, and well, I hope because the sport is hockey, I hope he doesn't get downgraded because of that. Doc Emrick, in terms of calling games, is legend. He's probably top five. Maybe that's maybe too high, depending on who you ask. Top 10, but I mean, in terms of just calling a game. Well, Doc will make, well, if nobody knows what hockey is, a person will still watch because Doc Emrick keeps you like this, like right in, like just like watching the game.
It's like a horse race.
It's like a horse race.
It's like a horse race. Talks so fast. When you hear Doc.
And he talks so fast and it's just crazy. So I wish him well.
I wish him well too.
And I wish his book well, but he is going to be missing. Well, I agree with you. I think John is next. Brendan Burke is up there. Like you said before the show, well, Kenny and Albert, he could be up there too.
Right, Kenny
so,
Albert.
So many guys could be up there, Will, so we shall see what happens there. But very well said, final take. Well, no final take for me. Wish the best for Doc. We see what happens with the Giants, Jets, and the Titans in week 7. Well, I was just thinking about this too, just to you know be real, real quick. We would be getting ready for the NBA this season this week or next week, man. Like it just feels weird that, and the NHL would have probably started
right.
So it just feels weird that you know, in about a week or so, we're only going to have one sport going. That's weird, and I think a lot of people are just going to be bored because there's no, you know, what I'm saying there's no hockey, there's no. A basketball or a baseball, so right. So she happens there.
Got to roll with the punches.
We have to roll with the punches there, so we shall see what happens there. Well, appreciate you as always, pal, and let's see what happens with the local teams going on. So, for my partner William Trucci, aka Will C, who's east of me, I'm your host Sean Thomas, aka Shawnee on the mic for On the Board Sports. We miss you all. We love you all. Peace out.